You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just ahead, researchers have found about a third of children in grades K through 2 are missing reading benchmarks. We hear about what to do about the reading crisis and hear your experiences. But first, the leaked draft opinion from the U.S. Supreme Court in early May suggested that it may be poised to overturn Roe v. Wade. If that happens, a Wisconsin law from 1849 could take force again and ban nearly all abortions in the state immediately. As Bridget Bowden reports, the state's abortion providers are already planning for a potential post-Roe reality.
On a recent Friday morning, Dr. Allie Linton was meeting with a patient to begin a medication abortion.
Okay, whenever you feel ready, you can take that first tablet.
Linton works at Planned Parenthood's Water Street Health Center in Milwaukee, providing both medication and surgical abortions. Since last December's oral arguments at the Supreme Court, Linton and other staff at the center have been planning for the overturning of Roe v. Wade and the end of legal abortion in Wisconsin. Even still, the leaked draft opinion took her by surprise.
I was sitting on my couch and I got a text from actually another abortion provider here in Milwaukee saying, is this real?
Now she says the planning has kicked into hyperdrive. They don't know exactly when the decision will come down, but they expect it to be in the next few weeks. While they wait, they're making sure to let patients know that some of the options they have now may not always be on the table.
We are telling patients we don't know how much longer we can provide abortions here, and that includes treatment for a failed procedure as long as the pregnancy is ongoing.
The clinic's recovery room is calm with dim lighting and soft music. Arielle Moulton is in one of the room's curtained areas waiting to begin a surgical abortion procedure.
I'm about 12 weeks and 7 days now.
Moulton is in recovery from substance abuse, and her pregnancy was not planned. She says she was already considering having an abortion before the leaked draft opinion, but hearing the news made her even more sure.
I mean, I knew what I wanted to do, but I mean, even after knowing that, I knew I had to get done because it's almost like I couldn't even consider not doing it because if I waited too long, then it's too late, you know?
She says she's alarmed at the potential of losing legal access to abortion in the state and wonders what someone in her situation would do if Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Nobody wants to get an abortion or do this, you know what I mean? But it's like sometimes that's a better option than having like another life, you know, in this world that just can't be provided for normally. Like I wouldn't want somebody else to go through that.
But even within the recovery room, feelings about the potential end of Roe v. Wade are mixed. Another patient who didn't want to use her name says even though she's choosing to end her pregnancy, she doesn't support abortion.
If they banned abortions, I wouldn't really be upset. It was just like, it happened. Like, you know, people just need to be more careful.
If Roe v. Wade does fall, Wisconsin abortion seekers could still travel to states like Illinois, where the procedures would still be legal. Planned Parenthood has already chosen staff members whose main jobs would become helping people get across the border. And many Water Street Clinic staffers are planning to get licensed to practice in Illinois, including nurse Susan Hedges.
For me, I'm in the phase of my life where my children are grown, so I could go down there for an entire week and come back. Potentially, I could rent an apartment down there, or I could move there.
Planned Parenthood has made it clear that no staff members would lose their jobs if abortion was outlawed in the state. But operations at the Water Street Clinic would look very different. Dr. Linton says the changes would be immediate.
The day of the ruling, the minute that ruling comes out, we have to suspend all abortion procedures.
Clinic staff is also trying to schedule procedures around the days when they think it's most likely a ruling will be released.
We don't want a patient coming thinking that they're going to get health care that day, and then we have to tell them no, based on a ruling that just came down, we have to turn you away.
For now, clinic staff is in a state of limbo, trying to see as many patients as they can before possibly having to stop abortion services. Still, they say no amount of planning can completely prepare them for the changes that may be on the horizon. Bridget Bowden, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now to summer literacy and what to do about COVID academic slide. As researchers say, the pandemic era setbacks are a seismic disruption. What will it take to help students catch up? What should parents and caregivers be doing about a child who has fallen behind multiple grade levels? Join in with your experiences, 800-642-1234. Latasha Fields is an adjunct professor in the School of Education at Concordia University, Wisconsin. She is a regional technical assistance coordinator for the Wisconsin Response to Intervention Center that's helping schools on equitable student support systems, and a former literacy coach. Latasha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, and thank you.
Give us a snapshot of the reading crisis as you see it.
Yes. So first of all, thank you for having me on this morning. But as we know, even prior to the pandemic, our students in Wisconsin, and particularly nationwide, have been experiencing academic struggles, as identified by some of our state assessments. And so I think that the pandemic really amplified some of those experiences, particularly for Black and Brown students who have experienced the lowest outcomes. And so during this time, I know that district leaders and educators have done their best alongside families to support students in learning, particularly literacy learning, and just really trying to think outside of the box in terms of how to get students caught up. And as we know, many of those students had to go to school via the computer. Some of the younger students, their first school experience was on the computer,
yes,
which is very hard for me to imagine. And so yeah, just all of the challenges that the pandemic presented on top of the challenges that educators and families were already facing has really been difficult during this time.
And researchers believe it's impacting lower elementary students the most, that the reading losses are really seen in that K through two, K through second grade area. Why are younger learners more susceptible to reading loss from the pandemic?
Well, I think there are several reasons. For one, reading at a younger age depends a lot on oral literacy. And so with mask mandates and students not able to physically be in classrooms with their teachers, that presented a lot of challenges. And so, for example, I served as a site supervisor for a teacher who was earning her reading license recently. And she talked about the struggles of teaching her second graders phonemic awareness and how, well, actually, I'm sorry, she had kindergartners mm-hmm. phonemic awareness, and how her principals, they gave them masks that were transparent, like you could see mm-hmm. the mouth. However, it was still a challenge because students need to be able to see how you're forming words and need to be able to hear that. And so if they're attending school virtually or attending school where you have to wear masks to be safe, it just presents a lot of challenges, and especially for those younger kids who have not really learned how to read yet, and they're getting ready to read, or they're in the early stages of reading and don't really have those skills to understand how to put those sounds and words together without that explicit instruction and teacher modeling. And a lot of times I didn't realize until the pandemic how close we interact with students physically. Mm-hmm. And when that distance is there, it's harder to teach. It just presents a lot of challenges.
Latasha, as a parent, they always tell you, just advocate for your child. If they have the proper support systems, they'll thrive and they'll be happy. And that sounds really great, and it sounds easier said than done. How would you suggest, a parent who can see that their child is struggling in reading and literacy specifically, how would you suggest they be better advocates for their child who is struggling?
Yeah, I would suggest that parents have a conversation with teachers, and specifically around what is it that my student child is struggling with. And so a lot of times us educators use a lot of jargon and talk about test scores and things like that. But I think to keep it simple, you know, is my child struggling with understanding what they're reading? Are they having trouble decoding words? Is it that my child is not understanding what they're reading or not motivated? Because there are a lot of reasons why children might be experiencing difficulty. And I think the more specific questions that parents ask, the more likely they are to get a better understanding of what supports they need. And when parents are asking questions, teachers are on notice that, hey, I need to make sure that I'm communicating with this parent about the needs that this child has and also giving suggestions for that parent in terms of what they can do at home to support their child.
Oh, so, you know, you're really telling me then to pick through the layers, be specific about what you're seeing or what issues the child is having. And if you can be more specific, that really will help educators zoom in on where the supports are needed.
Absolutely. And I recently had a conversation with a parent of a child in a special education. And what she learned through similar conversations that I just described by asking questions is that there were actually tools that were available to her child that she didn't know about until she spoke with her teachers to find out. For example, they had some text-to-speech equipment that her child could use to help him with his special educational needs and literacy. And had she not talked to teachers and asked those questions, she wouldn't have known about those extra resources. And a lot of times, while educators, you know, may have that knowledge, they may not necessarily always communicate that to parents until those questions are asked.
We are discussing learning loss and literacy, specifically what the summer holds, with Latasha Fields, our guide, a regional technical assistance coordinator for the Wisconsin Response to Intervention Center. Join in on literacy questions you have about your child trying to catch up to grade level, what you've seen the school year, what the summer holds, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment with Latasha Fields here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the decline of reading skills, what to do as the summer unfolds. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Earlier this year, we talked with Janelle Decker, who heads up curriculum and instruction for the Racine Unified School District, and she told us she sees students who are 1 to 3 grade levels behind, and children in poverty are most at risk.
A lot of the research shows that there is more learning loss that happens over the summer, especially with low-income families. And that learning loss, unfortunately, is cumulative.
Join in on the cumulative effects of learning loss, the impact to reading at grade level, what your child or classroom will do this summer. 800-642-1234. Latasha Fields, an adjunct professor in the School of Education at Concordia University, Wisconsin, with us for the hour. Latasha, we just heard there about how this particularly affects children in poverty. You also looked at how this is affecting our Black and Brown community of learners, Latino communities. How can we talk about this huge problem and also prevent stigmatizing those students in schools?
Yes, so I agree that that is a problem that we have to talk about, because typically learning loss is common for most students over the summer. And now, as I said earlier, with this pandemic, it's even amplified more. And so for Black and Brown children who have been experiencing reading difficulty or not having access to quality instruction or a variety of reasons, we really have to be intentional about how to support those students and making sure that as an educator, we have systems in place to provide those interventions that students need, but also for our families and parents. What are some of the things that you can do at home to support those students with literacy and reading. And I know we'll talk about this a little later in terms of some of those summer activities, but one of the things that is really essential is really understanding what's at the heart of the problem. And part of it is in schools, we talk a lot about culturally responsive practices, and that really has to do with developing cultural competence and making sure that learning is relevant for students, and also understanding what assets and strengths students have and bring to the classroom. Mm-hmm. So for example, there's a scholar by the name of Rudine Bishop Sims who talks about multicultural education. And what she teaches us is about this concept of mirrors and windows. And mirrors, basically, and when we think about literature, what are those books that we actually see ourselves reflected in? And so that might be physically, culturally, our identity, and then windows, how are we seeing others and their experiences? And what we find is, often for Black and Brown children, that they don't necessarily always see themselves represented. And I'm very happy, though, to say that things have changed since I was younger in terms of having more racially, culturally diverse books available to students. And I remember just as a little girl, I loved to read. And it wasn't until I became a teacher that I saw a story with my actual name in it, Latasha. I've never even seen that on a keychain. But Latasha in a story by Nikki Grimes called Come Sunday, and just the excitement that I had as an adult. And so really, when we are allowing our students or offering our students exposure to text and books and experiences that reflect who they are, it's just really important. And that includes other identities, LGBTQ, students who are differently abled, who don't often see themselves in stories.
In a relevant and meaningful way. I really love that personal story and hearing how, if you can find that reading material that enables those young readers to really see themselves in a positive light, see themselves in those stories and what a difference that can make. Talking with Latasha Fields, former teacher, mentor on responsive practices, literacy coach, classroom teacher for Milwaukee Public Schools, worked for 21 years. You can join in on summer literacy and reading loss, 800-642-1234. David with us in Ashwaubenon. David, hi, go ahead.
Good morning. I love the topic. My family teaches mostly English, and I recall when I was in college and reading studies and childhood development, and they ran into these things, and the discussion was all-day kindergarten and all these things and how much it made everybody, a lot of kids, stronger readers. But a lot of those studies also pointed out that through a strong program that by fourth grade, a lot of these deficits were made up. And I worry, not that we shouldn't be concerned, but should we be? There's almost a panic, or your school is bad, is what I'm worried about when we go through this, even though everybody is working very hard on this issue.
And that there's alarm bells in the first and second grade, but I think what I'm hearing, David, that also that strong programs can really make strides in third and fourth grades. Is that what you're driving at?
Right. And a lot of the strong program issue is like, and again, it's the summer deficit issue as well, is that be sure to read books at grade level to those kids, but also read above their grade level. They will assimilate and grow their vocabularies and become hungrier to learn and to read better through the example, and be that at the library or at home or all of those things, because I had ADHD before anybody knew what the heck it was. And because those things happened in my home, I was able to do pretty well.
David, thank you for those comments. Latasha, what's coming up as you hear what David says?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, David. What I was thinking about is, so typically in kindergarten through third grade, we know that children are learning to read. And by fourth grade, they are reading to learn. And so, David, you're absolutely right. Making sure that students have that strong foundation starting off, so that they can, when they are reading to learn, they do acquire the appropriate vocabulary that's needed. And I also heard you talk about at home, you know, making sure that children are reading and that parents are reading to their children, or at least giving them opportunities to be read to.
Hmm. Latasha Fields with us, former president of the Wisconsin State Reading Association, adjunct instructor at the School of Education at Concordia University, Wisconsin, as we explore range of remedies, interventions to help children catch up on reading at grade level. 800-642-1234 to share your experiences. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're discussing strategies to mitigate learning loss, especially in the area of reading. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Government Accountability Office has a new report out, surveyed thousands of K-12 educators, found 3 out of 5 virtual learning teachers said their students had more difficulty understanding lessons than in a typical school year. And that same ratio, 3 in 5, found more students who experienced emotional distress than in a typical year. Join in on what's compounding the reading crisis. 800-642-1234. We have Latasha Fields with us, adjunct instructor in the School of Education at Concordia University, Wisconsin. And Latasha is with us for the hour. Let's bring in another caller, John in Boaz. John, what do you want to bring up about reading?
Hi. The strategy that I used was to give my son an incentive and make reading fun. I gave him a penny a page, and we kept a notebook of all the books he read. And now he has a master's degree in computer science.
John, thank you for that story. Latasha, how well do award-based types of efforts work?
Yeah, thank you, John, for sharing that. I think that particularly in that case, that is a great idea. It breaks my heart when I hear some parents use reading as punishment. So I'm just happy to know that you motivated your child by providing incentives. And typically incentives in a school setting, that kind of gets mixed reviews. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And what I found is that there are different things that motivate children. And so what's really essential is really finding out what motivates a child to read, and how do you make it enjoyable? And if providing an incentive is something that works for your child, that is awesome, an awesome way to get them engaged.
When you talk about not using reading as like a form of punishment, it makes me think about summer school, because oftentimes students who attend summer session or summer school feel like they are being in a way punished. What is your approach to summer school? What impact can it have on a child's reading, on a child's literacy?
Yeah, I know that many districts are creative in providing summer opportunities that provide enrichment and or intervention for students. And so I certainly think that summer school is a great way to help students not really help them to recover from that learning loss, or really not experience that learning loss. However, I also think that summer programs have to be a way that, you know, have to be designed in a way that is more engaging. And so I know I have taught summer school, and we try to make it engaging by providing field trips and having a less formal atmosphere, so to speak, than a traditional school year, and really giving students something to look forward to. And it's my hope that many of the summer programs are still continuing to do things like that so that children are actually enjoying learning and it's not seen as a punishment. Because I know many kids, especially now, there's a lot of stress with children and educators and they need a break. And so if they are attending summer school, it should be a place where they can get additional support or enrichment and have fun while they're learning.
Sometimes with summer school, parents are a bit in the dark about what is actually happening or how the learning is happening. And as you see summer school, is there more individualized attention in this setting? Can you expect that type of support?
Yeah, it really depends on the district. I can't speak for all districts. However, most districts do have summer school teachers and leaders who are willing to talk with parents about what their curriculum is for the summer and how they can support how they're planning to support their children. And so I would just encourage parents to make sure they're having conversations if they want to know what their child is learning, having conversations with their child as well as with the teachers in the summer school programs.
And what is your advice to parents to make those kids motivated and excited to attend summer school?
Ooh, that's tricky. For younger kids, I feel like it's easier to motivate and excite them for the most part. But really, making sure that you're talking to them about what they're learning in summer school and helping them to understand that it's not... they're not going to be necessarily graded or taught in the same way that they are in traditional schools and that it's half day. Typically, mm-hmm. summer school isn't all day, so that might give students a little more motivation, but summer school programs vary and many of them do have fun activities built into them so that students are really engaged in the learning.
I've heard advice that in order to make reading a habit, it's not just about those bedtime stories. It's like reading anything with your child, street signs, the back of cereal boxes, the menu at a drive-thru, like literally reading anything. How do you make reading a habit?
Absolutely. So noticing the literacy around you and reading around you is certainly one way. And I think for parents, showing modeling for your child, being that example, making sure you're reading and really helping children to understand that reading is everywhere. I know that I worked with a young man, and this was an older student. And again, sometimes they're harder to motivate if they're not already motivated to read. And he was one of those students. But what I found out is he wanted to be a motivational speaker. And I'm like, that's awesome. So we watched motivational speaking videos on YouTube. We found a template, wrote out a speech. He read some speeches. And so that's also reading and literacy. And so what are those ways that you can engage and maybe identify what your children are already engaged in? If they're reading video game manuals, social media, those are also it's not reading as we think of in a traditional way, having a book and looking at it, but those are also ways to get engaged in learning and reading. I also think about children who may not want to necessarily read a book. Audiobooks are really popular. As a matter of fact, I'm listening to a couple right now. And as I travel, I look forward to listening to stories. And sometimes that's a better way for a child to engage in reading.
Talking about summer options, improving literacy for young learners, picking the brain of Latasha Fields, former teacher, mentor on responsive practices, literacy coach, classroom teacher for Milwaukee Public Schools. Join in on reading loss, what you have seen, parents, teachers, 800-642-1234. And let's talk about those next steps. Latasha, also to bring in the libraries here around the state, they all have summer reading programs. Department of Public Instruction also works with public libraries on this effort. What do you see there?
Yes, I absolutely love our library system in the state because they offer so many free educators. We love free things. They offer so many free activities and programs for children and families. And specifically speaking, I used to work with the Super Reader program at Milwaukee Public Library, and they also provide incentives. And what I like about that program, and it's just not for younger children, but younger children, teenagers. I'm here in Madison now where they have a writing program for teenagers that happens weekly, family programs. So I feel sometimes that our library services are underutilized, but they have a plethora of programs and materials for students and children to engage in and for families to engage in. And so I would say definitely thinking about your earlier question, how to make it a habit, go to your library, get a library card. Check out some books, you know, and engage in, and typically in libraries, they have areas that are designed for you to read comfortably in. And so, you know, take a visit on a nice, you know, summer day to go to the library and engage in some of those activities.
There's also a platform called Beanstack, a library program that's called Beanstack, and there's a contract for the state that that it has in order to access it. What is Beanstack?
I am not familiar with Beanstack. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. And, you know, also another thing that comes up is phonics. The Department of Public Instruction is endorsing that explicit phonics instruction. How is phonics taught, and how does our state feel and educators feel about phonics?
Yeah, so phonics is an essential foundational skill that is taught in a variety of ways. And educators have different approaches to how they teach phonics, but phonics is really one of five components to a foundational reading program. So you have phonics, phonemic awareness, vocabulary, reading comprehension, and fluency. And typically with phonics, it basically is having children understand sound to print. Mm-hmm. And so when they have mastered that skill, they're able to read and understand that, you know, letters have meaning and sounds and words, and they're able to put those together. And so that is an essential foundational skill, as I said, that is typically taught kindergarten through third. And for students who may be experiencing reading difficulty, they may also have to have some additional instruction, phonics instruction.
Okay, so that is the takeaways there on phonics. Let's go to Katie in Milwaukee. Katie, hi. What is your family experiencing?
Hi. I currently have a kindergartner and second grader, and we have experienced some real loss, I think, from the pandemic, where my second grader was completely virtual in first grade and half of kindergarten. And my fear is that she's actually truly lost some fundamental lessons in reading and writing. We have had struggles all throughout this year. And our school has done a great job in tutoring her and catching her up, but there are still some fundamental lessons in just how words are put together and some reading and writing comprehension that when I was teaching during virtual, or it was that half and half hybrid versions, that she just was not getting what she needed. And I see the difference because my kindergartner is getting that. Mm. And he's already at my second grader's level of reading. And I know that she will catch up, but I do know that there's been some real loss from this pandemic. And the window of timing here was unfortunate in that first grade, which is so important.
Oh, Katie, yes. Thank you so much for bringing that up, that half a kindergarten, all of first grade. I, too, was in that camp, Latasha, having twins who missed half of kindergarten and first grade, going all virtual there. What can you tell Katie?
Yeah, Katie. And so I understand that challenge that you face, that many parents are facing. And similar to what you said, I think if you're able to have some type of tutoring, because what happens is when children experience reading loss, expertise is really important, because typically parents and teachers may not be prepared to fill in those gaps. They only, you know, are prepared to do so much. And so seeking out the support of reading tutors who may have those specific skills to support your child, and also continuing to do what you're doing, reading to your child, doing activities at home that can support the literacy learning. And I really feel bad because so many of our kindergartners and first graders whose first experience was on a laptop, it's just not developmentally appropriate for those young students to learn. And so we really have to think and be creative and intentional about how do we help fill in those gaps. And I think seeking the support of others and making sure that you're reading with your child, reading to your child, helping to identify those skills that your child may be lacking, for example. So if there are any assessments that your child's teacher have done, asking them, you know, what did you notice that my child needs support on? And then what strategies can I use at home to support my child? Because the more that you practice reading, the key to getting better at reading is actually doing it. And so the more that you can read and understand what specific skills your child is missing, the better prepared you are to help support that learning. And as you said, I do believe that your child will catch up as long as you're intentional about continuing to support them in that way.
And here's that follow-up question. You know, if the parent can't step in to be that reading tutor, you know, once a day, 1 hour, ready to tutor, not distracted, has some good materials. And so if the parent can't do that, where should they look to find reading tutors? You know, where should they reach out, or what, you know, how do you find a reading tutor?
Yeah, so first I would reach out to the school and school district, because many school districts have programs or connections to programs that offer tutoring. Also, I would look at universities. There are several universities in our area that offer reading tutoring. Sometimes at a cost. Many of them have, for families who may not be able to afford to pay for that, many programs at the university level have sliding scale fees. And so just really thinking about those resources, the library again, I would talk to the children's library and see what type of tutoring or resources they may have. But we're very fortunate in Wisconsin because there are a lot of options for literacy support in terms of tutoring. And so I think just seeking out various programs, and there are private tutors as well. A lot of teachers, when I was a classroom teacher, I myself privately tutored. And so even your child's teacher may be open to working with your child, especially during the summer when school is out, you know, for an hour or so a week, in terms of helping support their literacy growth.
Latasha Fields, our guide to interventions on the Reading Crisis Coordinator for the Wisconsin Response to Intervention Center, former teacher, mentor on culturally responsive practices for Milwaukee Public Schools. Still time to talk about literacy, what you see, your plans for summer on reading, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with reading mentor Latasha Fields about the literacy crisis, the widening racial achievement gap, racial disparities in Wisconsin being the worst in the nation. The reading losses more profoundly affect Black and brown students and those from lower income families. Still time to talk about reading. 800-642-1234. Latasha Fields works with district leaders on educational intervention response, and she's with us for about five more minutes. You know, Latasha, learners are facing issues on multiple fronts: mental health, social emotional needs, math skills really falling behind. Why should reading intervention be a priority?
Well, reading, as we know, is really the foundation of all learning. And so once students are able to read in a way that they're understanding what they're reading with fluency, they're able to read math problems. They're able to read whatever it is that they need to read in school. Now, in terms of like the social emotional aspects, I think that in schools, we really have to remember and understand that more than ever, our students need holistic support. And so in addition to those academic supports, how are we giving children time to express what they're feeling and giving them strategies in handling their emotions as they're in schools? But I think that the focus on literacy will help improve all those other areas of education and learning.
I've heard sometimes, I think, that large print or large type books can also help with reading fluency. Is there anything to that?
Yeah, I think for students who, and by fluency, for those parents who may be wondering, we're thinking about, is your child reading with expression? Are they reading at a good pace? And large print may help them to see the words better so that they can read better, but also some other strategies that support fluency is reading with them together, something we call choral reading. So reading something at the same time, repeated reading, reading things over and over again so that they have opportunities to practice their fluency.
We heard from Lisa in Amberg, called and couldn't stay with us, but Lisa says their son had difficulty reading in those early elementary grades, was 2 years behind in his reading level, but then Lisa created this special graph chart for the wall during the summer that listed special activities, and then he would then have to read a certain number of books and then pick an activity like going to the zoo. And by fourth grade, Lisa says he had, some sixth grade reading levels there. So really another incentivizing program in that household, Latasha.
Yes, I love that idea. It reminds me of a reading bingo that I would offer to parents to do in the summer where they picked activities similar to what Lisa was saying. But for example, they kept a summer journal or wrote a poem or read for 20 minutes. And once they had, five in a row or whatever, they would have some type of incentive that they were working towards. And I think for many kids, that motivates them. And like I said earlier, when they're reading more, they're going to get better at reading. And so when your child is motivated by those incentives, that's really a great way to help them become better readers.
Pick up the bedroom, pick up here and there, help out around the house, but also, read can also, the incentives there for reading can also really, really help is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Well, Latasha, thank you so much for joining us and all your insights.
Thank you so much for having me.
Latasha Fields is an adjunct professor in the School of Education at Concordia University, Wisconsin, a regional technical assistance coordinator for the Wisconsin Response to Intervention Center, where working with district leaders on educational intervention response. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.